Welcome to the Nightmare Magazine Story Podcast. Enter freely and of your own free will. I am your humble host, Terrence Taylor, one very much at home with the children of the night. Stay close as my muse, the medieval demon Gubana, guides us down into beautiful darkness. In this episode, listen to The Forgetter, written by Andrew Snover and narrated by Stefan Rudnicki, directed by Allison Bell Buse. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's Journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's Journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to descend the shadowy stairs once more for a good long look behind the curtain of the everyday to see what lurks beyond. Have we got a nightmare for you?
The Forgetter by Andrew Snover. I work in a tall brick room with peaked cathedral ceilings. At one end of the room, there is a brick-lined chute, chimney-like, that opens up out of the ceiling 75 or 100 feet above a yawning pit in the floor. Every so often, without much warning, a body will fall from the chute and tumble through the air. I have two jobs, to write down whatever they scream as they fall. Mostly this is mama or no, or simply unintelligible throaty fear. I have surmised that those above may finish an interrogation at the moment when they drop the accused, and they hope that something useful or revealing will be uttered just before the end. Whatever is yelled, I'm required to write it down on three separate sheets of paper, then fold these and slip them into three numbered slots on the wall farthest from the pit. I believe that perhaps I must write it three times because there are three men who must know what is said, and they are too busy and important to share one copy. Perhaps they are irreplaceable parts of some giant process that would be unacceptably delayed if they could not read the triplicate message simultaneously. I have wondered. Adjacent to the three slots, there is a fourth, bigger, where food appears as often as I order it. I take the tray and eat its contents, and then write on a sheet of paper my order for the next meal. The choices are unlimited, as far as I can tell. This fourth slot will satisfy any whim of my tongue or stomach, and the tray has never been stumped. It got to be a game with me, and for a time I indulged in every ingestible luxury I could imagine, but I ran out of ideas for exotic and wild foods with which to test its limits. Now I stick to three or four consistent preparations, and only change the order when some wind of fancy takes me. When anything is available, sometimes it's more comforting to give oneself restrictions. And where does the food go after I've eaten it? Down the pit. with everything else. When there is no job to do, I am permitted to read. A book I read will mention another book, or the name of an author, or a place or event in a familiar manner that tells me I am supposed to know about it already. I have worked my way through hundreds by now, maybe thousands, stepwise from one book to the next, each only lighting the way ahead to the next book. I have wondered about the efficacy of this, and concluded that it is permitted for my mind to swirl thus slowly outwards, because the messages I write will be more useful if they are written by a person with some awareness of the meaning of things. Who knows what words might be spoken, what messages might need to be transcribed? Better for me to be prepared. There doesn't seem to be any limit to what I can read, as long as it doesn't get in the way of my job. I said two jobs. I was once told there's a third job, but I have only ever seen the two. I wonder about the third, but I am occupied by the second, and it distracts me. The second is the shovel. Whenever the brick chute high overhead was built, the architects did not, I surmise, properly plan for the momentum or the spin of a body falling out of it. Thus, the trajectory is very often wrong, and rather than dropping cleanly into the pit, the bodies splatter and spread on the side. In these cases, frequent cases, I'm sorry to say, I must grab the shovel and herd the remains towards their proper destination. I am on my second shovel now. The first was low and broad, with a short handle, perfect for placing on the bricks and scraping along like a plow, pushing everything in front of me. Unfortunately, this shovel wore down from the repeated rasping friction of the wet bricks, and in time it lost the straight line of its edge. Sharp points formed on either side as the center wore away, and these would catch in the cracks between the bricks. This was a problem for a time, requiring me to use ineffective poking and sweeping motions rather than the usual push. Then I resolved to write an order for a new shovel on the same sheet of paper as my order for lunch. With my dinner arrived a brand new shovel, although a different design with a longer handle and thinner scoop. This one takes more effort than the first, but I have adjusted my approach. At least they didn't give me a rake. And the old shovel? Into the pit. This second job is not as difficult to perform as one might guess. I'll often be distracted by an ache in my knee, or an odd scab that has appeared on my knuckle, or a buzzing sound in my ear, and then suddenly realize that the task is completed, and I'm standing in an empty patch of faintly glistening bricks. Sometimes a detail will catch my eye. Once the caprice of pain and speed conspire to leave nothing but a left hand balanced delicately on the edge of the pit. It had rough calluses and a large thumb. It was a strong hand, and instead of its weeping ragged edge, I could easily picture a muscled forearm, a pair of broad shoulders. A simple poke with my toe, barely any push, and it tipped gently into the pit and followed the rest of the body silently down. Only one event has ever broken the comfortable pattern of my work. One day a body came sailing down through the chute, like all the innumerable others, but then a third of the way down it was violently arrested by an invisible force. It stopped falling and swung back and forth above me. I leapt up and inspected, and saw that around 1 foot was tied a cord leading back up into the shadows of the chute. Had she gotten herself tangled in some rope just before the fall? Or had the throwers above done this on purpose, perhaps to allow themselves the option of drawing her back again? Could such a thing be done? I immediately considered writing on 3 sheets of paper a message describing this anomaly, but the woman had not said any words. Whatever process was being performed by the recipients of my papers, it hinged somehow on receiving reports of exactly what words were spoken, and surely it would be slowed by a paper containing no actual quote, but just an account of an odd circumstance. I went back over to the edge of the pit and tried to ascertain some sort of useful information that I might include in the messages in order to offset the delay they would cause. The woman's features were hidden in the gloom of the high ceiling, but I could see that she was not old. Blood dripped from her downstretched arm, but it was impossible to see from what wound this issued forth. The drafts and breezes of the high room spun the body, so that she looked like an inverted dancer. Then presently I noticed another motion, perpendicular to the spin. The woman was shaking and trying to wave her arms. "Hello!" I cried. "Are you alive?" But there was no response. As she spun around to face me, I could suddenly see the shine of one slitted eye couched in the pulp of her face like a gem in the folds of a dress. As I watched, this eye awoke and roved around crazily, blindly, like a climber's hands scratching for purchase on a cliff. "I'm here," I said. "I'm down here below you." The eye wobbled wildly down to me and held until her body spun too far for her to maintain the grasp. As the body swung into its next revolution, I saw the lips flap open and slap wetly, with a brief susurration of, "Ah, ah." "What?" I yelled. "What do you want to tell me?" And then as the body swung around again, her eye latched onto mine, and one word haltingly retched forth. "Ah, ah, out." "Out," I repeated softly. "Out. There is no way out." More loudly. "There's only back up through that chute, which is impossible, or directly down into this pit to wherever that leads. There is no way out." And then, as if my very words possessed a keen edge that sliced the filaments suspending it, the body dropped silently down, straight past my feet into the darkness. I stared down after it and gathered myself. Then I returned to the other side of the room, and wrote clearly in capital letters on three sheets of paper the word "out." I sat and waited. Having done my two jobs, I wonder about the third.
Welcome back. You have been listening to The Forgetter by Andrew Snover, narrated by Stefan Rudnicki. Andrew Snover's work has appeared or is forthcoming in the Tusculum Review, Streetlight Magazine, Wrath-Bearing Tree, and the 33rd Anthology. He received his BA from Penn State in English with honors and is currently studying to receive his MFA from Drexel University. He is working on his second novel and querying agents for his first. When not teaching writing or tutoring for the SAT, he can usually be found reading aloud to his children or watching the 76ers on an iPad while doing the dishes. Welcome to the Nightmare Magazine Story Podcast. Enter freely and of your own free will. I am your humble host, Terrence Taylor, one very much at home with the children of the night. Stay close as my muse, the medieval demon Gubana, guides us down into beautiful darkness. In this episode, listen to The Forgetter, written by Andrew Snover and narrated by Stefan Rudnicki, directed by Allison Bell Buse. But first, a word from our sponsors. It's time to descend the shadowy stairs once more for a good long look behind the curtain of the everyday to see what lurks beyond. Have we got a nightmare for you?
The Forgetter by Andrew Snover. I work in a tall brick room with peaked cathedral ceilings. At one end of the room, there is a brick-lined chute, chimney-like, that opens up out of the ceiling 75 or 100 feet above a yawning pit in the floor. Every so often, without much warning, a body will fall from the chute and tumble through the air. I have two jobs, to write down whatever they scream as they fall. Mostly this is mama or no, or simply unintelligible throaty fear. I have surmised that those above may finish an interrogation at the moment when they drop the accused, and they hope that something useful or revealing will be uttered just before the end. Whatever is yelled, I'm required to write it down on three separate sheets of paper, then fold these and slip them into three numbered slots on the wall farthest from the pit. I believe that perhaps I must write it three times because there are three men who must know what is said, and they are too busy and important to share one copy. Perhaps they are irreplaceable parts of some giant process that would be unacceptably delayed if they could not read the triplicate message simultaneously. I have wondered. Adjacent to the three slots, there is a fourth, bigger, where food appears as often as I order it. I take the tray and eat its contents, and then write on a sheet of paper my order for the next meal. The choices are unlimited, as far as I can tell. This fourth slot will satisfy any whim of my tongue or stomach, and the tray has never been stumped. It got to be a game with me, and for a time I indulged in every ingestible luxury I could imagine, but I ran out of ideas for exotic and wild foods with which to test its limits. Now I stick to three or four consistent preparations, and only change the order when some wind of fancy takes me. When anything is available, sometimes it's more comforting to give oneself restrictions. And where does the food go after I've eaten it? Down the pit, with everything else. When there is no job to do, I am permitted to read. A book I read will mention another book, or the name of an author, or a place or event in a familiar manner that tells me I am supposed to know about it already. I have worked my way through hundreds by now, maybe thousands, stepwise from one book to the next, each only lighting the way ahead to the next book. I have wondered about the efficacy of this, and concluded that it is permitted for my mind to swirl thus slowly outwards, because the messages I write will be more useful if they are written by a person with some awareness of the meaning of things. Who knows what words might be spoken, what messages might need to be transcribed. Better for me to be prepared. There doesn't seem to be any limit to what I can read, as long as it doesn't get in the way of my job. I said two jobs. I was once told there's a third job, but I have only ever seen the two. I wonder about the third, but I am occupied by the second, and it distracts me. The second is the shovel. Whenever the brick chute high overhead was built, the architects did not, I surmise, properly plan for the momentum or the spin of a body falling out of it. Thus, the trajectory is very often wrong, and rather than dropping cleanly into the pit, the bodies splatter and spread on the side. In these cases, frequent cases, I'm sorry to say, I must grab the shovel and herd the remains towards their proper destination. I am on my second shovel now. The first was low and broad, with a short handle, perfect for placing on the bricks and scraping along like a plow, pushing everything in front of me. Unfortunately, this shovel wore down from the repeated rasping friction of the wet bricks, and in time it lost the straight line of its edge. Sharp points formed on either side as the center wore away, and these would catch in the cracks between the bricks. This was a problem for a time, requiring me to use ineffective poking and sweeping motions rather than the usual push. Then I resolved to write an order for a new shovel on the same sheet of paper as my order for lunch. With my dinner arrived a brand new shovel, although a different design with a longer handle and thinner scoop. This one takes more effort than the first, but I have adjusted my approach. At least they didn't give me a rake. And the old shovel? Into the pit. This second job is not as difficult to perform as one might guess. I'll often be distracted by an ache in my knee, or an odd scab that has appeared on my knuckle, or a buzzing sound in my ear, and then suddenly realize that the task is completed and I'm standing in an empty patch of faintly glistening bricks. Sometimes a detail will catch my eye. Once the caprice of pain and speed conspire to leave nothing but a left hand balanced delicately on the edge of the pit. It had rough calluses and a large thumb. It was a strong hand, and instead of its weeping ragged edge, I could easily picture a muscled forearm, a pair of broad shoulders. A simple poke with my toe, barely any push, and it tipped gently into the pit and followed the rest of the body silently down. Only one event has ever broken the comfortable pattern of my work. One day a body came sailing down through the chute, like all the innumerable others, but then a third of the way down it was violently arrested by an invisible force. It stopped falling and swung back and forth above me. I leapt up and inspected, and saw that around one foot was tied a cord leading back up into the shadows of the chute. Had she gotten herself tangled in some rope just before the fall? Or had the throwers above done this on purpose, perhaps to allow themselves the option of drawing her back again? Could such a thing be done? I immediately considered writing on three sheets of paper a message describing this anomaly, but the woman had not said any words. Whatever process was being performed by the recipients of my papers, it hinged somehow on receiving reports of exactly what words were spoken, and surely it would be slowed by a paper containing no actual quote, but just an account of an odd circumstance. I went back over to the edge of the pit and tried to ascertain some sort of useful information that I might include in the messages in order to offset the delay they would cause. The woman's features were hidden in the gloom of the high ceiling, but I could see that she was not old. Blood dripped from her downstretched arm, but it was impossible to see from what wound this issued forth. The drafts and breezes of the high room spun the body so that she looked like an inverted dancer. Then presently I noticed another motion, perpendicular to the spin. The woman was shaking and trying to wave her arms. "Hello," I cried. "Are you alive?" But there was no response. As she spun around to face me, I could suddenly see the shine of one slitted eye couched in the pulp of her face like a gem in the folds of a dress. As I watched, this eye awoke and roved around crazily, blindly, like a climber's hands scratching for purchase on a cliff. "I'm here," I said. "I'm down here, below you." The eye wobbled wildly down to me and held until her body spun too far for her to maintain the grasp. As the body swung into its next revolution, I saw the lips flap open and slap wetly with a brief susurration of, "Ah, ah." "What?" I yelled. "What do you want to tell me?" And then as the body swung around again, her eye latched onto mine, and one word haltingly retched forth.
Out.
"Out," I repeated softly. "Out."
"There is no way out."
More loudly.
"There's only back up through that chute, which is impossible, or directly down into this pit to wherever that leads. There is no way out."
And then, as if my very words possessed a keen edge that sliced the filaments suspending it, the body dropped silently down, straight past my feet into the darkness. I stared down after it and gathered myself. Then I returned to the other side of the room and wrote clearly in capital letters on three sheets of paper the word "out." I sat and waited. Having done my two jobs, I wonder about the third.
Welcome back. You have been listening to The Forgetter by Andrew Snover, narrated by Stefan Rudnicki.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Andrew Snover's work has appeared or is forthcoming in the Tusculum Review, Streetlight Magazine, Wrath-Bearing Tree, and the 33rd Anthology. He received his BA from Penn State in English with Honors and is currently studying to receive his MFA from Drexel University. He is working on his second novel and querying agents for his first. When not teaching writing or tutoring for the SAT, he can usually be found reading aloud to his children or watching the 76ers on an iPad while doing the dishes. Stefan Rudnicki is a Grammy-winning audiobook producer and an award-winning narrator who has won several Audi Awards, as well as more than 25 Earphones Awards, and been named one of Audiophile's Golden Voices. Stefan has been producing Lightspeed Magazine podcasts since 2010, eventually adding Nightmare and Fantasy Magazine, and sharing the Hugo Awards for Best Semi-Prozine in 2014 and 2015. Nightmare is published by Adamant Press, and this podcast is produced by Skyboat Media. This episode is copyright 2023 by Adamant Press. Post-production was by Jim Freund. Our music was composed and performed by Jack Kincaid. Thanks for listening. This is Terrence Taylor, wishing you all the best from all of us at Nightmare Magazine, and sending you back to your reality for now.